Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and today my guest is Justin Crane. Justin served for 12 years in the military, but he left due to medical reasons, and that left him in a depressive state after getting out of the military. And he's here today to discuss his journey and, importantly, how he was able to change himself for the better after getting out of the military. But before we get into that whole story, welcome to the show, Justin. I'm really glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here, Scott. I really appreciate it. I'm glad I have an opportunity and a place to share my story. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. For the listeners who aren't familiar with you and your background, I know we're going to get into your story in a little bit here, but I like to usually start off an episode with just telling people, you know, who is this person that we're talking to and what's your background and who are you and things like that. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks. So I grew up in a small town in Indiana. I figured I was a normal kid, normal family. And going up through high school, I really liked sports. I excelled in sports, played basketball, ran track, played football, and then focused on football towards the end. But I really wasn't a kid that really liked the academics. And that kind of held me back from the sports part. But the reason why I chose the military is I didn't want to go to college. And I knew I wanted to do something with my life, and I wanted to get out of the small town that I was in. And so I went to the recruiter, and I said I wanted to do something that was going to keep me in shape and athletic and fun. And they gave me an option of being a SEAL or being a rescue swimmer. So I did my research, and I thought the rescue swimmer was the route that I wanted to pick. And so I did that. And I wasn't a big swimmer, so rescue swimmer school was quite a challenge for me, just like everyone else that goes. So I got through that and then did the rescue swimmer typical gig that you would do out of a back of a helicopter with a squadron. And my first station was in Pensacola, search and rescue. And so I went through three hurricanes there, got rescues in Hurricane Katrina, got a rescue off of a Coast Guard boat. And then I decided to switch commands. I came up to Virginia Beach, Virginia, and was at another regular helicopter command that deployed. And then I wanted to always be a SEAL. After I became a rescue swimmer, I wanted to be a SEAL. But in my rating, it was really hard to do that. So I never had the opportunity, but I was presented a chance to go with a helicopter unit that did special operations. So I screened for that. And that's what I did at the last probably 8 years of my military career. So I did five deployments to Iraq, supporting all special operations inside Iraq at the time from 2007 to 2010. And then I finished up my career at water survival training, teaching pilots how to, and air crew how to survive in the water. And then from there, I had to get out. Basically, we talked about, I had a medical retirement. We'll talk more about it. And I was confused. I didn't know what to do. I was kind of lost. And so I went back to school, and then I slowly just saw myself kind of drift away. I lost myself and I got into contracting. I was making good money. You would think on the outside looking in, my life was great, but I was slowly collapsing inside. And it took me a long time to figure out what was going on. I was able to save myself. And now I want to help others do that. And that's why I am a mindset, fitness, and nutrition coach. So I help everyone that has lost, that's lost their way like I was, to get back on track and let them know that there is a way out. You can fix yourself and you can love yourself again.
And that's a great message too, because I know sometimes we have those demons in our head that are telling us that we're not good enough, we're not smart enough, we're not strong enough, we're not whatever enough. And, for some reason we listen to them. You know, anyone else told you that, like they walked up to you and said, "Hey, you suck and you're terrible and whatever." It's like, you know, screw you, dude. Like, no, I'm not going to listen to that. But for some reason we listen to that voice in our head, and, maybe sometimes we do need to have somebody in our corner who's like, "No, man, that voice in your head is stupid. Like, don't listen to it." Yeah. But sometimes you got to listen to the voice. You know, sometimes like, yeah, don't do that stupid thing. Okay, listen to the voice. But, when you got that voice in the back of your head that's telling you stuff that is clearly not true, you got to have someone there to kind of help kick you out of it. So I want to get more into your story here in just a minute. We're going to take a quick commercial break here, so stay tuned. Experts say that China is hoarding a massive amount of food. They will soon have over two-thirds of the globe's corn reserves, over half of its rice, and over half of its wheat. But when asked about it, China lies. One China expert says they, of course, will never admit to something like that. Well, what does China know that we don't? When it comes to global food shortages, China is the canary in the coal mine. You see, China is the world's number one food importer. They rely on the rest of the world to keep their people fed. So they can't afford to mess up, or there will be riots, civil panic, or even worse, when over a billion people can't eat. What does this mean for Americans like you and me? Two words, food shortages. That's why it's a smart idea to stock up on a kit of the best-selling Four Patriots survival food. Create your own stockpile of the best-selling Four Patriots survival food kits. They're hand-packed in the USA. The kits are compact and stack easily. They have different delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners. And their five-star reviews on the website rave about their flavor and taste. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase of Four Patriots survival food by typing in the code DRIVEON at checkout. Just go to fourpatriots.com and use the code DRIVEON to get 10% off your first purchase of Four Patriots survival food. That's fourpatriots.com. Use code DRIVEON. Everybody, welcome back. Justin, in the intro, you were talking a little bit about your time in the military, the work that you did as a rescue swimmer and then working with special operations and all of that type of stuff. Tell us more about your time in the military and specifically the transition out of the military. We mentioned in the intro that you left for medical reasons. What happened there and what was that whole situation like kind of leading up to it?
Okay. Yeah. So like I said, I went through rescue swimmer school. My whole training for becoming a rescue swimmer and then learning to get qualified to fly in the back of the helicopter took about 2 years of my military training in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And so I went through boot camp and then 2 years of training. And then I get to my first squadron, which is down in Pensacola, Florida. And that's a weird path for someone new that's joining the fleet to go straight to shore duty at first. But it was kind of unique because the military has gone away with search and rescue. The Navy has gone away with search and rescue units. Now it's more for the Coast Guard, and we do rescues on ships and stuff like that, but we don't have the dedicated search and rescue. So it was really fun. So I got to work with Rescue Swimmer School, Air Crew School, and Pilot School down in Pensacola, doing bay operations. And then also we were on standby for any rescues that happened. And we were right there with the Blue Angels. So my first tour was awesome. And like I said, I got to go experience Hurricane Katrina, and that was just kind of a breathtaking moment. Like, to be there, it was so surreal. And to look back at it now and just think about how sad that was and being there. And, I just felt blessed to be there, to be able to help and do, everyone trains as a rescue swimmer to get rescues, and not everyone gets to get rescues. And
right.
It was pretty cool getting to do that. And then, like I said, I wanted to always go on and be a SEAL and go to training for that. But when the military spends a lot of money on you in the very beginning, they want to get your money out of you. And my rate was undermanned. And so they were not going to let me, my detailer was not going to let me go. And so I just kind of sucked it up. That's fine. And my commanding officer, he knew that I was a good sailor. I was a good guy. And he's like, hey, we got up this unit. It's called HSC 84, and they do special operations. They go over to Iraq, and but you have to screen for it. So I screened for that. And like I said, I went and did five deployments there. And there's tons of stories from there. It was a blast. And then from there, I went on to water survival school to teach people how to survive in the water. And then that's when everything kind of went sideways. I was in the pool, and I got out and started getting vertigo. I've never had that before, and it was the worst feeling. The rescue diver had to pull me out of the water because I thought I was swimming up to the surface. I was actually swimming down, and which was kind of just, it felt weird. And I just felt like I had like a blockage in my ear. I couldn't clear. And so I went to medical. The doctors, there's nothing in your ear, and your hearing in your left side of your ear is like, it seems like you're deaf. And I couldn't hear anything for like a day, and then it came back and everything was fine. And that just happened a couple of times. And then once a doctor or corpsman or anyone in the military says vertigo and put it on your record, you're pretty much done in any special programs.
Yeah.
So it then my process out, she gave me about a year. I didn't have to go to any other command. I was able to continue working, doing what I was doing. And then I had like a year to prepare myself to get out of the military. And so I didn't lose pay. I didn't do anything. And then I got a full medical retirement out, and the VA rating. I got a really good VA rating. And I was still pretty sad though. Like I did not want to get out. And sure. The way I had to get out was really tough. And I didn't know what to do because I didn't know anything else. And I just went to, I was like, you know what? I'm going to finish up college, use the VA benefits. And I did that. And that's where I kind of lost myself. And now I didn't know I was losing myself at this time. I didn't realize what was all going on until about 2020. So, you know, that's my transition out was kind of a tough one because I didn't want to leave.
Right. And a lot of people who get out on a medical discharge, this is something that just happens almost like overnight. Like someone who gets a serious injury, you know, they lose a leg or something like that. And it's like, yeah, maybe there's some rehab time or whatever, but you're basically like pulled out almost right away. And it's like, that's a tough pill to swallow because you may have envisioned a 20-year career in the military. And then all of a sudden that just goes up in smoke. You can't do that anymore. And you've lost that ability. You know, but it was good, I think, in a way that you had that year to prepare for getting out of the military. Now, did you know this whole time during that year time period that, you know, you're getting out? It's just a matter of when. Was that kind of how it worked?
Yeah. So I had two things going. I had the doctor that I was working with for the VA, and he was skeptical on giving me what he thought was wrong with me because he's like, I've had a lot of Top Gun F-18 pilots that lose their career over this, and I don't want to label it. But I was knowing in the back of my mind, talking to the medical people down in Pensacola that make the decisions, they said vertigo's already on your record. It doesn't matter. So I was confused at one situation. I knew I was getting out, but the doctors were like, we don't really know if this is what you have, but if we have to label it anything, it's this. Okay. And so at that point I made the transition, and I suggest anyone that's getting out of the military that for medical reasons is go use what is there available for you. The VA office, every major medical facility in the branches in the military, they have one. They have advocates for you. And I spoke to one and they helped me get the best rating that you could possibly get when you get out. And so make sure that you guys do that because your rating's all on the work that you put in to get that.
I like how you said that, like use that before you get out, because a lot of times when you're going to these ratings, the stuff that they're looking for is, you know, what's in your military records as far as your medical history goes. And if there's nothing recorded in your medical history, it's a lot more difficult to tie something to be service connected if it's not in your military record, medical record, I should say. So yeah, do that before you get out. Figure out what it is that you need to do. Maybe you need to go make appointments and get something documented for, you know, like vertigo in your case, or hearing loss, or whatever it is. Get that stuff documented, so that way when you're getting out, you're able to get the rating that you deserve, as opposed to jumping through hoops years later trying to figure out, okay, how do I tie this back to my service, because I never went to medical, never got anything documented, I never took care of that. That's kind of a big issue. Now, you mentioned that you're in college now after getting out of the military, and you felt like you kind of were losing yourself. And I think that's a common thing that people do too. But they don't realize it at the time. What was that all like, and how did that situation play out for you?
Yeah. So I went from a job in the military that I had to stay disciplined. You know, my pay relied, and my job relied on, if I wasn't in shape, physical shape, I was not gonna be able to do my job. Right. And, so I've always had like a structure. When you get out of the military, you don't realize how much you rely on the military to hold you accountable still, even though you're your own self. And whenever you get out, it's on you to do that. And then I did something that was easy. Like I thought when I was in high school, I thought college was going to be hard. Then I get in the military, then I go to college, and I'm, you know, you just show up and you can get through college. It was, for me, it was really easy and I wasn't challenged. And I stopped waking up at a certain time. I would get up when I would go. And then, you know, drinking was something that was always around for me in the military. And I noticed since I had a lot more free time, I started doing that more with my neighbors and just going out. And then, yeah, it was just a spiral after that because I had no structure. I had no drive and I had no discipline anymore.
Yeah. And I think that's another common thing that happens with people getting out of the military is they lose that discipline and that structure because the structure makes it easy to stay on top of a certain routine. You know, okay, you got to wake up at a certain time. You got PT, you got this, you got that, this training, that training. This is where you need to be. This is what you need to be wearing. This is what you know, they tell you everything's laid out for you. And you also have a command structure that's there that's looking out for you where you got a problem, like, you know, some of your medical problems, you can bring that up to your chain of command and be like, hey, look, I got to go get this checked out. And they want you to be your peak physical mental condition to be able to do your job. Because if you're not, then they're not getting the best sailor, marine, airman, you know, soldier that they could, you know, depending on what branch you're in. Now, you get out of the military and all of a sudden that whole structure, everything that we just mentioned, that's gone. It's you against the world. And there's nobody out there who is going to check in on you and say, hey, you know, why weren't you in the gym doing PT today? Or why weren't you, you know, if you skipped a class or something in college, like nobody's calling you up and be like, hey, what the hell? You weren't in a class. Like nobody cares. And so that's all on you. And you, for one person to have that motivation when for years, you had other people, that external motivating factors, like, well, I don't want to get smoked, so I'm going to make sure I'm on time, you know,
that type
of thing, you know? So, like your college professor is not going to, you know, make you do push-ups until you puke, if you're late to class or something, you know?
No accountability there. It's
none.
It's got to be on you and you learn that, but you don't know how to adapt it really quickly when you get out.
Right.
That's what for me anyways.
Yeah. And it's a hard thing for people, especially like we were saying, like coming off of being in that structured environment for so many years, you know, 12 years at that point, that's a significant chunk of your life at that point that it's like, okay, well, I had this and I kind of got used to it. And it's kind of a nice, easy way of, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's an easier way of going through life because you do have that support system in place. You know, there's a steady paycheck coming in. You know that housing's taken care of for you. You know, food, meals, all that kind of stuff, that's taken care of. You don't have to think about those things. It's just there. Even clothing, like you don't really need to worry too much about clothes. It's pretty much the same thing every day, you know?
Right.
You only got a few options, so it's like not that big a deal. I want to talk more about kind of some of the coping mechanisms that you kind of found yourself in and what you ended up doing to kind of pull yourself out of this rut in just a minute. But we're going to cut to another quick commercial break and we'll be right back. So stay tuned. Attention, proud Americans. The Patriot Box is here to ignite your patriotic spirit. As a veteran-owned business, they offer hand-curated boxes filled with useful, fun, and delightful American-made products. Join their community of proud Americans and receive your very own Patriot Box delivered straight to your door. Unbox a treasure chest of quality products while supporting local small businesses and veteran charities. Check out the link in our show notes to learn more. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. We have Justin Crane here who was talking about his transition out of the military, dealing with vertigo, which essentially made it, made him get out of the military for medical reasons, medically discharged. And, he was talking about working to get the benefits that he was supposed to get coming out of the military. And he had some good advice there earlier in the last segment about, making sure all your medical stuff is up to date before getting out. Work with the advocates at the VA to work on that disability rating and all that kind of stuff, especially if you're getting out on a medical issue. But anyone, I think this is good advice for. It would help later on is if you have all of your medical stuff documented, no matter how small it is. Justin, you're talking a little bit in the last segment, how you're kind of lost your way and, drinking was a big thing in the military. It's kind of prevalent. I think that's probably across branches. I think that's pretty much a universal thing. Army, Marines, whoever, there's a lot of drinking going on there. And you said you found yourself getting more and more into, you know, drinking and stuff like that after, really not having anyone to hold you accountable. Maybe a strange way of asking the question, but what was like the mindset there? Was it just like a coping mechanism for you? Or because, you know, I always think to myself, like, no one grows up telling themselves they want to be drinking all the time and be a drunker, you know, be alcoholic, whatever you want to call it. And I also can't imagine anyone wakes up one day and is like, hey, you know what, today sounds like a great day to, you know, just get completely blasted and, you know, not have a care in the world about anything else. So like, there's always that lead up and it's like, okay, well, like one more is not that big a deal. One more is not that big a deal. Like, what was that process like for you?
Yeah. So like you said, it was just kind of, I joined in 2001 and got out in 2013. And so it wasn't that drinking was glorified. It was just something that, you know, we did on the weekends. I remember in Pensacola, I didn't really drink in high school. And through the military, when going through training, I wasn't yet old enough. But once I turned 21, I didn't even go out and drink then. But then eventually, I think around 23, I started drinking and just didn't stop since then. You know, it was just every weekend going out, having fun. And then when I got out, I can't remember how old I was. Like, it's still in the 30s, 32. And I still had friends in the area. So we would go meet up on the weekend. It's just kind of like we were reliving the old days, talking. And then I just noticed people stop drinking. And I was married at the time. And, my wife's family, we would get together and have get togethers. There's always drinking around. But what I noticed is I started doing it more by myself. So, at the time I didn't realize it was a coping mechanism, but it was because I was in a depression. Like I said, I didn't know I was depressed at the time, but the drinking was just kind of like an escape. Instead of using like working out and everything else, like I took all my healthy habits and I didn't do them anymore. I wasn't getting up at a certain time, wasn't holding myself accountable. I didn't care really what I looked like. But I think a lot of us have like body dysmorphia sometimes when we really like lose ourselves, we look at ourselves in a mirror and I always thought I was okay. I'm like, oh, I'm fine. You know, I stayed in shape. I would work out 3 or 4 times a week still. I'm okay. I can go do this. And then, you know, misery loves company sometimes. And so I found like my friends that I was getting were people that were at the bars. And so they would ask me to come out and, you know, I'm an outgoing person. I like to have fun. And then, as time went on and I, got done with college and I went and, started doing contracting, you would be gone just like you were in the military for 4 or 5 months, come back. And I would have, you know, 1 to 2 months to do nothing. And instead of being productive, I just made that time to say, I'm going to relax because I'm owed something. And, I found myself just partying like way too much, just drinking, traveling to go places to meet up with friends and just living the lifestyle that you don't want to live. And I thought it was okay. It's just like, whenever you do something for so long, you think it's the norm. And then when you double down on it, you don't realize how bad you're getting. And people, I've had a lot of warning signs, like, you know, and I think it was around 2016, 2017, I've had, you know, my wife at the time will tell me she thinks I have a problem. All my friends are reaching out. Hey, we think you have a problem. And I'm like, you guys just don't get it. Like, you don't understand what I'm going through. Like,
sure.
So I used getting out of the military as a reason to drink because you guys don't know what I'm going through. I miss all my friends. I miss being in as an excuse to drink.
Yeah.
And so your mind, like you're saying before, your mind will tell you everything's okay. And deep down, I think I knew what I was doing was wrong. Like we all have a conscience and you got to listen to it. And I kept just pushing it away and pushing it away. And then on top of that, in 2018, I was going through a divorce and I had my son was born at that time and I was living across the country. We were in Washington State. And then during the divorce, after my son was born, my wife at the time moved back to Virginia Beach I stayed out there and I just went through a really bad depression, even worse, started drinking more. And then I went to the doctor and talked to them about my depression. And instead of, not saying that doctors are bad, but instead of fixing the problem, they just gave me, here's some Xanax, you know, here's some medication, take this if you feel depressed. And nowhere did they tell me, I mean, it says it on the bottle, but they don't really go into detail saying, if you mix Xanax with alcohol, you're really going to be messed up. Yeah. And so then during that time, that's when I got a drunk in public. And then like the next week later, I got a DUI. And then it just kept snowballing from there. And yeah, it was not fun. And it just kind of got away from itself during that point.
So Justin, at this point, you know, things are going downhill and you're probably starting to recognize, okay, something's wrong. You obviously went to the doctor, you know, talked about things were wrong and things are going even further downhill in the wrong direction. At what point did you sort of have that light bulb moment where you were just like, you know, enough's enough. I got to cut this shit out and I got to get back on track.
Yeah. Like, so I said before in 2020, was when I realized, you know, I went through my divorce and, you know, that the divorce wasn't from drinking and everything I was getting. It wasn't meant to be, but it just was horrible timing. And, I saw myself, missing time away from my son. And, I was just living a lifestyle I didn't like. So in 2020 is when I realized I needed to make a change, but I didn't know how. So I didn't know that I was addicted to Xanax because the doctor that I was seeing just kept giving it to me, saying it was okay.
Sure.
And what happened is she ended up getting fired from the place I was seeing, and she got sued for malpractice for giving out too much medicine. Mm-hmm. And then I had a lady that came on and helped me afterwards, and she's like, was asking how much Xanax I was taking, and I told her, and she's like, well, you're not drinking on that either. I was like, well, yeah. And she's like, you're lucky you're alive. Wow. She's like, you know, for what you're taking and drinking at the same time, like I've seen people take one milligram of Xanax and have a glass of wine and not wake up from that. And you're going out and taking 3 to 5 milligrams a day and going out and drinking heavily with your friends. Like, we need to stop this. And, that's when I knew that I had, like, because I was like getting these spells where I would, and during all this time I was having, this time I was a director of training for a drone company here in Virginia Beach. I was showing up. No one knew. Maybe they did know, but I didn't let work really see my problems. And so I started like fainting and having these like dizzy spells and passing out. And I thought it was my vertigo. And the doctor like, are you taking the Xanax correctly? And I said, no, I'm just taking it when I feel like I'm depressed. She's like, what's happening is you're taking Xanax and then 2 or 3 days go by and you're going through withdrawal symptoms. And that's what's making you faint and pass out. Yeah. She's like, we really need to get you off this. I need you to stop drinking, but that's another thing, but let's worry about getting you off the Xanax. And so she wanted me to go into an inpatient care where they monitored me for 10 days because you can really, if any of you guys are on Xanax or taking any type of those benzoids, I think that's what they're called. You have to be careful when you come off them because you can die. You can go have seizures, everything like that. And so I, with my job, I was like, I can't do that. She said, okay, well, it's going to take a very long time. So it took me about 6 months to come off of it completely. And I tapered off and then I got off of that. And then I still had the drinking going on. And that was up until earlier this year, about 5 months ago, I just ended it completely. I didn't need rehab. I didn't need anything like that. It was coming across the right person who was doing the same thing I'm doing, a coach. And he spoke to me in a way, he didn't cater to me. He was blunt. He was straight up and said, you have a beautiful son. You know, I have a girlfriend that I'm with now that I love a lot. And they're like, if you keep doing this, they're not going to be around. And so you need to change what you're doing. And he just woke me up. And that's, you know, where I really, really made the change. But like I said, it was almost a 3-year process to get off of everything altogether.
Yeah. And sometimes it's not a quick process. And especially like you said, with the prescription medications, you know, for anyone who's listening out there, who maybe is feeling like maybe this isn't the right thing for me or whatever, like talk to your doctor, And don't just cold turkey stop taking it, because like you said, that could cause some major problems if you just stop taking certain medications. You might have to taper off over the course of maybe a couple weeks or a couple months, depending on how long you've been using it or what dosage you're on and things like that. I know, you know, myself, my wife, we've had certain medications over the years for various issues. And the doctors were insistent, like, don't stop taking this. Talk to us first if you want to come off of it. You know, like, and that was good because, you know, I'm not a doctor. I don't know all of these things, and you know, neither is my wife. And so, you know, having that knowledge, like, helped us to, okay, taper off. And it wasn't the easiest thing to taper off, but once when you're off, it's like, okay, now I can kind of breathe again if something was wrong, you know. But
yeah.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about this and, you know, get into some advice that you might have for other veterans in just a minute here. We're going to take a quick commercial break, so stay tuned. In a startling description, the UN food chief warned the world with the words, "knocking on famine's door." He called what we're facing a perfect storm of a perfect storm. And he's not alone. Barron's published that a food shortage could be coming, even in the U.S. Farmers see it too. John Boyd Jr., a fourth-generation farmer, told Fox News that we're going to see empty food shelves in the coming months. That's why getting survival food is more important than ever, now. Create your own stockpile of the best-selling 4 Patriots survival food kits. It's not ordinary food. We're talking good for 25 years super survival food, hand-packed in a family-owned facility in the USA and giving jobs to over 200 Americans. They have different delicious breakfast, lunch, and dinner options. You can make these meals in less than 20 minutes. Just add boiling water, simmer, and serve. And right now, and for the next few days, listeners of the Drive On podcast will get 10% off their first order at 4patriots.com by using code DRIVEON. Go to 4patriots.com and use Drive On to start your stockpile today. So, Justin, we've been talking a lot about your background, your situation, the stuff that you've been going through, and what you're dealing with. But now you're kind of on the other side of some of this here, where you're now helping other people to improve themselves, improve their lives. I want to start with like a little bit of advice that you might have for other veterans who are feeling either stuck, alone, depressed, some of the similar issues that you are having. What do they need to do to start pulling themselves out of that dark place that they're in?
Yeah. So for me, what I did and what I think anyone can do is just realize like the trend, like if you're thinking about getting out or you're getting out right now, like the transition is going to be tough. Like you had a brotherhood and it's not there anymore. And when whatever you're going to go do after this, it's going to be a tough transition because civilian life is not the same. And so if you feel yourself getting depressed, what you really need to do is double down on the things that you did in the military that kept you going. So you need to have a good morning routine. That's one of the things I focus on. Even though you're not required to get up a certain time, still get up at a set time and give yourself time in the morning to gather your thoughts and do something physical. Whether that's, I like to go for a walk when I get up, kind of gathers my thoughts, I might think for the day, and it gets me moving. But what a lot of people do when they get depressed and they don't realize how this is happening, this is what happened to me, was I was constantly letting myself down. And so your subconscious mind sets in and you don't know that, like, you're telling yourself that you're not good anymore. So if you tell yourself, and I was doing this a lot, I'm going to get up tomorrow morning, I'm going to work out, I'm going to get up at 5 and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. The alarm would go off, I would hit snooze. Every single time you do that, you can't even hold yourself accountable at this point. And so what you have to do if you really want to make a change and find yourself like I was, is you have to have a really good talk with yourself. And maybe you can't realize it. And I would say, like, you know, getting help is always an option. And that's what I had to do. And my mentor who helped me, he kind of came across just through YouTube. And then one of my best friends knew him. But what he was able to do was show me things that I didn't know about myself. Like, I didn't know I was doing all this. And so maybe have an outsider do this, but the first thing you got to do to get out of anything is you have to take an inventory of your life and realize you're in the situation 9 times out of 10 because of your decisions. you're living out the karma debt that you've dealt yourself. So if you got out of the military and then you didn't do anything, like I did, like I felt like I didn't do much once I got out of the military, I let myself go. I'm paying for all that lazy work and non-work I didn't do. And so I had to say, okay, I'm in this mess because of me. I'm the only one that can get myself out of this. So what do I need to do? Let your conscience be your guide. So you take a list of everything that makes you unhappy. And it sounds simple, but you immediately cut those things out. So whatever doesn't make you happy, cut them out and then start slowly adding in some healthy habits I could talk about, like getting up in the morning, physical activity, start eating better. And you'll realize that these little bitty things that you do every day, you start building your confidence back. And I think fitness is like the key to any type of success. You add in a physical routine and eating healthy, it's going to carry over. It raises your frequency. It puts you in a better mood. They say exercising for an hour will last 12 hours afterwards, which releases these endorphins. It just makes you feel better. It just makes you a better person. So for me, it's like the feeling I get after the gym is better than any Xanax or drink that I had. So it really does. Sure. And if I don't get it now, this is a lifestyle. This is a habit. If I miss the gym for some reason, it puts me in a bad mood. And if I, for some reason, don't get my morning routine done, it puts me off. And so I just think the first step is realizing you have a problem and then realizing you're the only one that can get yourself out. And it's a process of elimination. Success is going to be subtractive. So you got to take a lot of stuff out that's in your life that's not doing you any good and then add in some healthy habits. And that's how you get out of it. That's how I did.
And that makes a lot of sense too. When you have this negative stuff going on, drinking or just being depressed, staying in bed, hitting the snooze button over and over and over, it's not helping anything, you know? And you gotta do these things and subtract out the stuff that's causing you that discomfort or the pain in your life, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things along the way is going to happen is you need to look at like who you're hanging out with too. Who is your support system? You know, my mentor says love is not lies. So you need some people in your life that are going to hold you accountable. A lot of friends are not going to hold you accountable because they're doing the same thing and they don't want to see you as successful. You may think that your friends, and I found this out the hard way. I thought I had friends until I told them that I didn't want to drink anymore and I didn't want to hang out with them because I didn't like the lifestyle they were living. And they immediately started hate on me. Like they don't like that I want to be successful. They don't like that I want to stop. And just realize there's going to be a lot of people out there that are probably going to be against you whenever you do want to make that change.
And that's such a sad thing too, that wouldn't everybody just want the people that they know in their life to be successful? I know, like if I see a friend or a family member who has succeeded in something, maybe they graduated college or they got a promotion or they started a new business or something, it's like, I'm happy for that person. I want that person to succeed. I don't want it's not like I'm going to look at them and be like, hey, good luck with that. You know, this might last 6 months or something, you know, like that would be like such an asshole thing to say. But there's people out there that actually think that way. And they, I don't know, like I think you said this before, misery loves company. And they just want more miserable people around them. Maybe, I don't know.
I think what happens is like, so for you, it's hard for you to understand because you love yourself, you love your life and everything like that. But if you're in this low frequency negative state that these people are in, if they see someone else do something, they probably at that one time wanted to do it, but they didn't have the courage to follow through with it. So they see you and they like, well, you can't do that because I wanted to do it. So no way you're going to do it. I'm just going to hate on you. And that's what I found. And I found when I was like in the state I was in, drinking all the time and, you know, taking the Xanax, I wasn't a good partner to a lot of people, like my girlfriend for one. And thank God for her. Like she stayed with me through all this. And even though I'm not married to my ex-wife anymore, we're still friends. Those people really cared about me and they stood by me and they realized I had a problem. But, I was in that negative state too. I was tearing everyone else down because I was miserable inside. So I can see why that happens. Those people are just, they're miserable too. So what you could do is, as you're rising up, those people that are trying to hate on you, try to help them too, you know, try to reach out and try to give them some advice, but they're probably not going to listen to it because no one's going to listen until they're really ready to make the change for themselves.
Yeah. And I think that's an important thing too, because you might find yourself beating your head against the wall, trying to, try to help those other people and try to drag those people back up. But if they're not ready to receive that advice, or they're not receptive to it for whatever reason, you're not going to make any impact. As a matter of fact, you may push those people even further away, which may be ultimately what you need to do, is just say, look, these people are cut off, and I don't want to go down that path with them. And they're heading down a place that I just don't want to be. And I want to make changes for myself. And I tell this to my kids all the time. Like, you know, sometimes they have issues with other kids or between themselves and stuff like that. It's like, the only person you could change is yourself. You can try to affect some sort of change in other people, but if they're not willing to listen for whatever reason, or they're not willing to make any sort of changes, then, you know, what can I tell you? They're just not going to. And so, focus on you, like, do the things that make you happy. And if that means that somebody else is pissed off at you because you're doing the thing that makes you happy, or is advancing yourself in some way, well, screw them. Like, that's not your problem that they feel that way. You got to do what's right for you.
Yep. Yeah. And that's a great point. One of the things I wanted to say too is, like, whenever you find yourself again, whenever you fall in love back with yourself and you regain yourself, you have your purpose again. Mm-hmm. And what you're losing when you get out of the military, you had a purpose, and now you don't have one. And the way to find your purpose is find yourself again, make yourself happy, and then you find something that you are wanting to do. And for me, that's what I did. I found my purpose again. That was to get myself better, take care of myself, and then to share that with the world and to help others do that. And I had, like, there's the reason why it was so easy for me to quit drinking, which was the hardest thing for me, is because I don't like my purpose now is way more than the pleasures that I was seeking. So I don't even think about it. It's not even an option, because it gets in the way of what I want to do.
Yeah. Because if you are continuously doing all of that, you're not going to be the best version of yourself to be able to help the people that you're helping out. And even if you were still doing what you're doing now and helping other people, they're going to look at you and be like, well, you don't even have your life together. Like,
exactly.
Why should I listen to you? You know? When you have that sense of purpose, like, knowing that, okay, I can't help these people unless I get myself right. That makes it a whole lot easier, because that purpose is bigger than you. It's bigger than, whatever you have going on in your life. I think that's something that people need to understand too, is that that you need to have a purpose, somebody or something else out there that is bigger than just you, that gets you out of bed in the morning. In the military, we had our leadership, our chain of command, whatever rank you were, you had somebody else out there who was like, I'm going to actually physically come and drag you out of bed if you're not, you know, at PT in the morning, or something, you had that external motivation. It's like, okay, well, I don't want to be embarrassed because I'm, not making it to PT on time, or, whatever it is that you're doing, you had that motivation. You get out of the military, you sort of lose all of that. But having that sense of purpose, serving the people that you're serving now, the types of clients that you're working with, those types of people are your purpose. Some people, it could be their family. It's like, I want to be the best dad that I can be. I want to be the best spouse that I could be. I want to be the best whatever. That type of thing, I think, is a decent motivating factor as well for some people. Other people, maybe it's not as big of a factor to them, but there's something out there that will light a fire under you, that will get you motivated to want to achieve a certain goal. I know people do volunteer work. They find places that tug on their heartstrings, and they're like, okay, these people that I'm going to serve, maybe they're serving at a VA hospital or a veterans home or something like that, and they're just volunteering and helping those people out. Well, hey, great. you know, you found your purpose, and there's a way that you can continue to serve these people. And that helps tremendously, because you don't want to let those people down. You know, you don't want to let anyone down when you're in the military. You know, why would you want to let these same type of people down, you know, now that we're all out, you know? And, you know, that's just, I think, another way to give back and serve too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's go ahead.
Yeah, and that's another great thing that you brought up, giving back. Everyone, I feel like we, in general, we want so much from everyone, but we don't give anything. And, sure. You normally, whatever you give, you receive. So, you know, if there's something that you want in life, start giving that out to the world, and then the world will give it back to you.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Give more than you receive sometimes. And, you'll start to see that what you get back, maybe you can't find it on, you know, a financial statement somewhere as far as what you're getting back, but, you know, the mindset, the benefits that your mind gets, your body, your just overall benefits that you receive, those types of things I think are priceless. And when you are doing it and it's something that you work at and you love and you enjoy, then you get that financial aspect of it too. And that's you know, just a win-win for everybody, I think. We're going to talk a little bit more about what you do and where people can get in touch with you in just a minute, but we're going to cut to another quick commercial break here, so stay tuned.
This message is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. There are multiple ways veterans can maximize their tax benefits. Military retirement pay is taxable as federal income tax and isn't considered earned income for Social Security purposes. Sometimes money from VA isn't taxed, including interest from VA life insurance policies. Go to news.va.gov and search for tax benefits.
Well, Justin, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today, hearing about your journey and how you've pulled yourself back up out of the dark place that you were heading down. For people who want to learn more about what you do and the types of you know, work that you do now, who might need a little kick in the butt to get themselves back on track, where can people go to get in touch with you, find out more about everything that you do?
Yeah, so everything I do is through Instagram. So it's Justin Crane, C-R-A-N-E underscore fit. And you go to my page and I'm posting over 10 stories a day, just giving out helpful information. And then my posts, they just talk about different life experiences, show my workouts, what I'm doing. And yeah, I just want to spread awareness and realize, you know, if you can learn through me, I share my experiences I've gone through. If you can learn through me and I could save you heartache and get you right back on track, that's what I want to do. My passion is to help people. I've gone through so much and been in really some dark places, and I can save anyone from that. If I could save 5 years, 1 year, a month, then I'm doing my job, and I just want to help as many people out there as I can.
And that's amazing. You know, I think obviously if you can help one person, then it's probably fulfilling, but the more people obviously that you can help, the better. So I will have the link to your Instagram in the show notes for anyone who wants to check out, you know, your page and follow along and even reach out and get some advice and, you know, maybe some personalized tips and things like that. You know, whatever it is that you might be able to help them with, I'm sure you'll be able to do that. So, again, the link will be in the show notes. Coming up here, I want to do a quick segment. I like to call it, is it service connected? Like to wrap up these episodes with a little bit of humor. Sometimes the topics that we talk about are a little bit heavy and, you know, it's nice to end with a little humor. For the viewers who are not familiar with, is it service connected? It's where we look at a video of a service member doing something stupid, otherwise getting injured. I like to think of it as America's Funniest Home Videos for, you know, military edition. And we try to predict whether or not the injury that they sustain would qualify for VA disability somewhere down the line. For podcast listeners who can't see this video, I'll do my best to describe the video for you, or you can tune it in at WTSMTV.com to see the video. I may also post a video to social media later on too. So follow Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and you'll be able to check out the video there as well. So I'm going to get this video queued up here. But again, like I said, these videos, it's usually someone doing something stupid. In this case, looks like we got a Marine here with his pistol, and he's about to rock that slide back. That's what it's looking like. It's starting off as, and I can only imagine like where this is going to end up. Is he shooting something, or what's going to happen? I don't know, but let's see where this ends up. Okay, so he's trying to be a little bit of a gangster here. His hand gets pinched in the slide as he's sliding it back the second time. Although I did see his hand, he's pretty lucky. His hand did cover the muzzle of the gun at one point, and that could have gone a whole different situation. That could have been a totally different thing there.
Yeah,
it turns out it was just a little slide pinch. So I don't know. I don't think that's really gonna qualify for any sort of disability there. I don't know. What do you think?
No, definitely not disability. Probably some trouble if that video gets out and his command cell there. So
yeah, I'm thinking. The way he's handling that pistol is not really, he's going to need some additional training. Let's put it that way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Maybe if anything, it's the mental side of things. If this video gets out, and which now it is, cause, we're using this now and a bunch of people are going to be watching it. So, guy's going to be pretty embarrassed by how stupid he ended up looking on this video here, trying to act all tough and acting like a gangster and everything, but.
Yeah,
let's face it, you're not. So
yeah, exactly.
Maybe he's got something on the mental side. I don't know.
Yeah, that's not good.
Definitely not. Anyways, Justin, thank you again for taking the time, coming on the show, sharing your journey. Really, it's inspirational to me to hear people come through tough times and come out on the other side a little bit better for it. And I think other people out there can take something away from you and your story. So thank you again for sharing.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And it was an awesome time, and I thank you for the experience.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.